Welcome to another episode of the Purple and Bold podcast from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, brought to you by the Daily News Record. I'm Shane Metlin here in Brooklyn following the JMU Dukes as they continue their run in the NCAA tournament following a victory against Wisconsin in the round of 64. The Dukes will take on Duke Sunday night here in Brooklyn. Round of 32, second round of the NCAA tournament. First time JMU has made it this far in the NCAA tournament since 1983. Third time in program history the Dukes have advanced this far as a double-digit seed. The 12 seed here in the South Regional getting a chance to take on the number 4 seed, Blue Devils, in what's going to be one of the biggest games in program history in quite a while, aiming for a Sweet 16 appearance for the first time in JMU history on the men's basketball side. Just been a historic couple weeks for the JMU basketball team here in Pensacola and now in Brooklyn as we followed them with a run. 32-3 is the record now after beating the fifth seeded Wisconsin Badgers. Technically an upset on the bracket, technically an upset in Vegas. Did not appear to be an upset in any practical terms on the court when the two got together Friday night here in a pretty well-packed Barclays Center that got loud during the nightcap for the Badgers and the Dukes. JMU fans traveled quite well. I think a lot of local area alumni from the New York, New Jersey metro area were in attendance. I think a lot of people traveled. Obviously, you know, lots of friends and family, the players and coaches were here. But, I mean, it went well beyond that, the amount of purple in the arena. They, you know, maybe borrowed a little bit of purple from Northwestern fans who hung around, wanted to see the upset. Maybe were rooting a little bit against their conference mates from Wisconsin. Everybody in the building that wasn't a Wisconsin fan, and there were a good number of Wisconsin fans, they also traveled quite well. But, you know, it's the way the NCAA tournament works. Everybody who's not cheering specifically for that team will adopt the higher-seeded team. And we got a little bit of that Friday night as a lot of supporters for JMU, who maybe had no ties to JMU coming into the night, really got behind the Dukes and were celebrating as it came to an end. And the JMU players kind of came to their side of the floor where a lot of their fans and faces they would recognize, friends and family, were sitting, got them excited, got to kind of celebrate with them a little bit. But, you know, it was a celebration that didn't last that long because they're moving on and they've got to get ready for a Duke team that they're going to face Sunday night. As I hear, record this Friday or Saturday afternoon at the Barclays Center. You may hear some squeaking sneakers and whistles down below me. JMU's having their practice right now. I can't see what they're doing. I can hear what they're doing. This is a closed practice, so not getting a lot to look at there. But they're preparing for a Duke team that I think will be a tougher and maybe, you know, a different and more difficult kind of challenge for JMU as they get ready to face Duke, one of the true blue bloods of the sport of college basketball. But before we talk too much about Duke, let's look back in a little more detail of the victory against the Badgers. One that JMU led wire to wire. They get up 3-0 to open the game on a Noah Friedel three-pointer. As many have pointed out, similar play, similar result as they opened the game at Michigan State. And, you know, played well the entire time there. I can't remember if they led the entire way at Michigan State, but they were in control for a good chunk of that game and kind of pulled away as things went on. And then had to hold off Michigan State in that one. But it was a similar kind of start to things for the Dukes. Dukes and playing their second Big Ten opponent of the season. We saw some similarities. We saw physical nature. You know, that's the kind of basketball they play in the Big Ten. And regardless of that, JMU was the more physical team. And, Wisconsin coach Greg Gard said JMU was one of the most physical teams that they play, if not the most physical team they've played all year. Very, very, very impressive performance by the Dukes, which, as I said, was not an upset in any real tangible form. Once you saw these teams on the court, you switched their jerseys, you don't know who's who, you don't know who's seeded who, take all those numbers out. Nobody would have guessed that JMU was the 12th seeded team, as opposed to Wisconsin, who was just coming off a appearance in the Big Ten championship game. They just beat, very recently in the Big Ten tournament, Purdue, which is a number one seed and among, I would say, the three favorites to win a national championship this year, right up there with Houston and UConn as the true favorites. So we saw that Purdue's ceiling, or Wisconsin's ceiling rather, is extremely high, and they are capable of doing a lot of good things and beating a lot of good teams. They have good size. They have a seven-footer, Stephen Crowell, A.J. Storr, a slashing guard who can really score, really fill up the basket. Those are the two best players coming in, and JMU proved that they matched up with them very well. They had a very good game plan to go against Crowell in particular, a lot of doubling, trapping with him, kind of making him uncomfortable, not letting him get right to the block. He was playing on the baseline a lot, but outside the lane, seeing that trap coming down, the double teams coming on him, he's forced to pass out of that. He's a decent passer, but like the passes that he made didn't seem to be the kind that set Wisconsin up for good in rhythm looks at the basket, and I think that showed in their shooting for the game. They had a pretty terrible shooting night. They weren't making shots from the outside, and it kind of then sort of became a thing when they got two to basket. They missed a lot of shots in the lane. That also had to do with JMU's physicality underneath that wasn't a tightly called game at times, although, you know, there were some calls as it happens throughout the game. I mean, I think, you know, Raekwon Horton fouls out, didn't necessarily agree with all the calls against him. Some calls probably went against JMU as they tried to play a little more physical. But all in all, you know, the foul trouble caught up to JMU a little bit. But all in all, it wasn't extremely tightly officiated game, which I think benefited JMU to some degree because they wanted to go in and say, hey, look, we're going to push you around. If anybody thinks we're going to get pushed around by Wisconsin, that's not going to be the case. We're going to push you guys around. They did that, and they're able to win without doing the things that always kind of tend to be the recipe for a double-digit seed winning a game like this. They didn't shoot extremely well from three-point range. They were only 29% from behind the arc. After Friedel's big shot to open the game, they didn't hit a ton after that. Mike Green hit some timely ones and played very well in his return to New York City. But it wasn't a case where, like, oh, they're going to shoot lights out from three, make a dozen of them, and pull away that way. It wasn't a case of, oh, somebody's becoming the March Madness mid-major hero. It was a very balanced effort. Terrence Edwards led the team with 14 points, but there were multiple guys in double figures, including Green, including Julian Wood, and including TJ Bickerstaff. Lots of guys who had, you know, around 8-9 points. Raekwon Horton, who I mentioned fouled out, was playing very well up to that point. Had 7 rebounds, 9 points, I believe. Sorry, I don't have the box score right in front of me. But all in all, very balanced effort, showed their depth, showed what they were able to do. When it came to guarding Storrs, Terrence Edwards did a really good job on that, but they also got some very important minutes before he fouled out from Raekwon Horton, like I mentioned. His ability to kind of spell that and do a really good job on Storrs, who didn't do much in the first half. He warmed up a little bit in the second half and finished in double figures, but took a lot of shots to get there. And then JMU really, really kind of shut down Crowell in the second half after he had a pretty solid first half statistically, but didn't eat them up. And then he didn't really do much in the second half. It was Max Clement, kind of, you know, their sharpshooter, their answer to Noah Friedel, if you will. He had a really good second half, wound up with 18 points. His three-pointers were really the only thing that kept JMU from really turning this into a rout early in the second half. JMU got up by, I think, 17 at one point. They led by double figures for a lot of the way to close it out with a 11-point victory. That was just impressive and saw the Dukes in control from the beginning and really just kind of, you know, not the typical lightning in a bottle type of upset to the point where, you know, that's been the discussion here around Brooklyn, not just from me, but from lots of other members of the media, the questions that the Dukes are getting in their press conferences about how this wasn't really an upset. This is a JMU team that spent 8 weeks in the top 25. And, you know, along those lines, they dropped out after they had their first loss. They started getting some votes again in recent weeks, but they weren't ever back in the top 25 after getting their first loss. They only lost three games all season. And Terrence Edwards said it today during JMU's press conference here ahead of the Duke game that, hey, I think people forgot about us after week one. This is what Terrence Edwards said. You know, maybe it wasn't exactly week one because they did spend 2 months in the top 25, but it was sort of like a feeling like, okay, we have to rank them because they're undefeated, but we're waiting for them to lose so we can move on. And, you know, they've shown basically with every opportunity to do so that they were a legit team and have made a lot of fans and made a strong impression here in Brooklyn, regardless of what happens Sunday night against Duke, which brings us to those Blue Devils. Obviously, one of the greatest programs in basketball history, all those years under Mike Krzyzewski, and he's now handed the reins over to John Shire. Shire, his press conference, he's one of those guys who I think is very polished, and he talks for a long time, and then when it's done, you realize he hasn't said a lot in the amount of time he's talked, but showed a very healthy respect for JMU. I think they've really gotten into scouting the Dukes so far. Sat next to some of their coaches during the JMU Wisconsin game because that's where they were seated for scouting, and they seem to be pretty impressed with JMU. I mean, they pretty quickly, you know, came to the conclusion that they were scouting JMU for this game, I think. I feel like, you know, they go in, like, probably preparing to spend a little bit more time on Wisconsin and see what happens, expecting them to likely move on. You know, their attention, I think, pretty quickly shifted to JMU, like, not just because they were winning, but just sort of the way that they were winning and how you kind of try to take JMU out of their game because the Dukes have been able to establish what they want to do for the most part each time out this season, and they definitely did it on Friday night against Wisconsin. You can kind of, you know, if you're Duke, though, I feel like you probably have to take a pretty strong look at those Appalachian State losses to JMU. Two of the three losses for JMU on the season to Appalachian State, a team that, you know, while they did some okay things on offense, especially in Boone, where they scored 82 points. For the most part, I think JMU was pretty satisfied with their defensive performance in two games against App State, especially playing them at home in Harrisonburg. I've heard from the staff that they lament that home loss to App State the most, it seems like, because they held App State to 56 points. And they feel like if anybody they hold to 56 points, they are going to score enough to beat. And they just didn't do it against App State. App State blocks a lot of shots. They kind of disrupt JMU's offense. And it'll be sort of interesting to see what happens with JMU then as they face a Duke team that for the season has not been among the nation's leader in shots blocked. But they were doing a lot of that, especially Kyle Filipowski. They both blocked and disrupted a lot of shots against Vermont in their game on Friday. And Filipowski, certainly Mark Mitchell to a little bit lesser degree, are guys who are going to, you know, challenge JMU at the rim, probably change some shots if they want to go right to the basket. Be interesting to see if we see a little bit more of them trying to, rather than rolling right towards the rim, you know, maybe a little pick and pop action, look for things on the elbow. That, you know, baseline extended, I feel like you look at TJ Bickerstaff, you look at Julian Wooden, guys who will play underneath for JMU, that, you know, 10 to 12 foot jumper from the baseline, the shots they can hit that are not the easiest to block compared to going right at the basket. So, you know, you look at that, and Vermont did a fairly remarkable job on Kyle Filipowski. You know, a lot of questions to Duke and to John Shire at their press conference today had to do with Kyle Filipowski only taking one shot against Vermont. They didn't really need him to do much more. They're probably going to need him to do more offensively against JMU. But it was an interesting dynamic that they didn't force the ball into him. He didn't look for his shot a ton when it came to that. And we'll probably see more of Filipowski on offense for JMU. He had a great defensive game. He rebounded well. He even dished out some assists. But I think we'll see more from Filipowski offensively against JMU as they try to kind of adjust to what JMU did against against Crowell and Wisconsin. There's some similarities between those two, although I think Filipowski is probably a little more athletic, a little stronger, and, you know, probably just more well-rounded as a player than Crowell. He's going to present some different challenges. One player who had a really impressive game for Duke Friday night against Vermont that I think could cause some problems is Mark Mitchell. He plays more of the four. He's kind of a traditional power forward for Duke. And that will be interesting to see how JMU kind of matches up there, because yeah, his skill set, his level of athleticism, and his strength probably more resembles what TJ Bickerstaff and what Jalen Carey do at the five for JMU, where, you know, you have a more lengthy guy like Julian Wooden, who's a little bit more of a stretch four, a little bit thinner, leaner, but a great jumper. I do wonder if maybe we'll see Wooden on Filipowski and the combination of Bickerstaff and Carey on Mitchell to a degree. Mitchell, I think he might have ended up hitting a jumper at some point during the game, but by halftime, he was in double-figure scoring. I think he had 11 or 13 points at the point at halftime, and all of his points at that point in the game had come either dunks or at the free throw line. That's what he's doing. He's getting to the rim, and he's getting to the rim with some force and authority. So you're going to need a guy who can put a body on him, really, if you're JMU, a guy who's maybe going to push him out of the lane a little bit or not get pushed into the lane themselves, which sounds a lot like Jalen Carey to me if we're looking at how JMU might match up. In the backcourt, I think, you know, both teams are, you know, quick and good in the backcourt. JMU, you know, probably goes unnoticed to some degree how well JMU has played defensively with their smaller guards in the past couple games, because they did a really good job disrupting what Caleb Fields of Arkansas State likes to do in the Sun Belt Championship game. Give a lot of credit to Xavier Brown, starting point guard as a sophomore, for that. He and Mike Green both did similar things against Chucky Hepburn and Wisconsin. Hepburn hit a couple shots like late in the second half that kept Wisconsin from just getting completely blown out in this game. But, you know, they'll face different challenge against Duke. Duke has quick guards, but I think they're up for that to some degree. I expect another pretty close game. Duke is better, frankly. Duke's just almost like a better version of Wisconsin. Although, you know, JMU was clearly the better team against Wisconsin on Friday night. I think, yeah, went into the game against Wisconsin kind of agreeing with, like, looking at the KenPom ratings and everything, the analytics. It gave Wisconsin a 68% chance of winning, and that sounded about right to me. That sounded, you know, JMU could win 3 of 10 against Wisconsin. That sounded accurate. Completely changed my mind after seeing the two teams play up close. I would say flip it. JMU should probably win 7 times out of 10 if they're going to play the Badgers that many times. And, you know, you heard, I think, Wisconsin lament a little bit, like, oh, it's one and done tournament. It's not a 7-game series. If it was a 7-game series, maybe things are different. I don't think so. I feel like JMU would have won a, you know, 5 or 7-game series against Wisconsin. They just were better, more athletic, stronger, more skilled in a lot of areas. And I think they'll be able to compete with Duke, but not necessarily outclass Duke in the same areas that they did Wisconsin. Not to say that JMU can't or won't win against Duke, but I think it's going to be a lot tougher when we're talking about trying to advance to the Sweet 16. So we'll see if the analytics sites like a KenPom.com or any more accurate when it comes to breaking down JMU and Duke as opposed to JMU and Wisconsin. Like I said, I would flip the odds after seeing the two teams up close. You look at KenPom right now, giving JMU a 23% chance to beat Duke here at the Barclays Center. And that might seem a little bit low if we're looking at it. Just because I think you take in the human factors, you take in the intangible factors that this JMU team is playing with a lot of confidence. They'll have a lot of the building behind them. You know, I was workshopping some, you know, University of New Jersey at Durham and University of New Jersey at Harrisonburg jokes going into this one. But both teams are going to have a lot of fans here. But like I said before, you kind of will see a lot of the building adopt the Dukes. Once the game begins, there'll be a lot of, you know, UConn fans in the building who I'm sure are not going to root for Duke. So I would say maybe the Duke's odds are a little bit higher than 23% or what they're going to get. But, you know, the team with the longest active winning streak in the nation, JMU, going to try to make it the longest winning streak in school history at 15 games, surpassing their previous 14-game winning streak to start the season. They're now with another 14-game winning streak as they're 32-3 heading into a second-round game against the mighty Duke Blue Devils. We'll see what happens on Sunday night. Will we be moving on following this team to Dallas for the regional semifinals, the Sweet 16 round of the NCAA tournament? We will see. We'll revisit everything we've talked about here. Following those games, we'll continue to have plenty of coverage in print and online of this, you know, fairly historic, magical JMU basketball run. In the meantime, we'll wrap up this edition from Brooklyn, special episode of the Purple Bowl podcast. I'm Shane Metlin. You've been listening to us. I'm your beat writer at the Daily News Record, and I really appreciate everybody following along and enjoying all of our coverage as we follow what's become just an unbelievable, remarkable year of James Madison sports. In the meantime, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for clicking on us, and we'll talk again soon.